Welcome to Be Simply. This is She, and I want to give thanks for each and every one of you connecting in this moment or the next. Tonight, we have special guest Tony Califf, and he is going to give some beautiful music metaphors, and we're going to connect to his wisdom from the East to the West. He's going to share how to potentially make peace with trauma and its possible reason for its appearance in your life, and how to embrace the tension to move forward in many things that you are ready to experience. Please, without further ado, let's dive in. Tony, I want to thank you for joining us today. It's such a pleasure and a treat to have you here.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
I wanted to, what was on my intuitive mind from the dream world this morning in regard to this interview was to talk a little bit, as you mentioned in your email, being a child of war. But I, you know, so often it's hard for us to really understand what's going on the ground in a place other than we are. And when we look at mass media, that can be a distortion. We don't know if that's really happening. If you can share a little bit from your experience, and as we have a lot of things uprising right now, globally right now, how, in general, most people on the planet, I don't think, want to be harming one another. And if you can share a little bit from your own experience and your own reflections.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty loaded question, Suzanne.
We'll get into music, I promise.
I'll be more give you as much as I can.
Okay, great.
You know, I think the idea of what it is like to be on the ground is very much so the heart of it all. Because if you take all of the comfort of daily living and replace it with hunger, no electricity, no running water, on top of that you have bombs falling at you from the sky. So you basically are living in hell. It's truly what hell feels like. And on top of that, you add the suffering of loss and the pain that people are experiencing during such incarceration and conflict. It is really unbearable. I mean, I don't know how people survive, truly. I mean, it is really a sad state of being. I was very young when the war started, and I had discovered the guitar before the war, but I wasn't really allowed to play it because it kind of was a distraction from school. But when the war started, basically it's like just a fabric that you just tore apart, and everybody that you knew that was your friend became your enemy, and you had to move to a place that is more like-minded or like religion, so that you can survive the war. So the whole thing got very just weird and upside down, and I was too young to even understand what was going on. My first memory of escape or leaving our home was, I remember the most is I left my guitar behind. So it was a love relationship from the beginning. You know, we've all been damaged by the war in so many ways. I mean, I've sustained a lot of injuries in the war. My mother and my sister sustained the most injuries. We have a lot of family members, immediate family members who have suffered great casualties. And, you know, and at the end of it all, besides the fact that it's the human condition and what happens when you put people on top of people and you just cramp them in one place and you just keep throwing conflict and there is no dialogue and education is limited. So you end up with a lot of problems that you can't really solve. You know, one major thing, like it's in Lebanon, for example, you can't really get into an exercise. If you want to go out for a run, it's almost impossible. I mean, the city is so packed and so jammed that There is no outlet. Finding the music, especially the guitar, because the guitar was such a small instrument, it was not intrusive at all. And be able to sit in a corner and play and figure out that thing that is called music was certainly a key in making me become the person that I am, which having the capacity to transcend the war and all of the traumas that come with it and the sadness and the suffering and make great music instead, you know. It's really a blessing and somehow somewhat privilege, you know.
So you share transcend trauma. How could you share with those listening that are still making peace with any trauma they've experienced or still in trauma, just some simple tools maybe you've utilized over the course of your lifetime to get yourself beyond being in that space, which can be immobilizing at times?
Yeah, you know, what I've learned in my experience is that trauma visits you at the most crucial moment where you need to either make a decision or something triggers that trauma. And really all it is, because with our discoveries about the spiritual path, we're discovering you can change your own epigenetics, you can change the way you see things, you can change the way you feel things, and that will help you change the memory by which you relate to things. So trauma is really, it's a memory syndrome, you know. It is triggered when it visits you when it feels like it, or if there is an impetus for it, or whatever. But the only remedy I found was to be able to find when that trauma visits me is to invite it to be replaced by something else, which for me was the music. I created a system of going back and forth between how I feel about what's happening to me and how the music translates it back. You know, music is so profound because music has a system in it that is tension to release, and that's we call harmony. That to make harmony in music, you create passages and you prepare for the tension to happen, and then you also command the release, and you can decide when that release happens. So there is an innate process in music that helps you figure out your issues and harmonize that which is creating tension in you. So by simple grace of practicing a tool or using a tool like music as a daily practice, I was kind of constantly working with the issues as they come about, you know. And some traumas, sometimes they don't have an expiration date, you know. No matter what you do, they keep on chasing you. But really, my the only thing I would say is find the thing that you love, that you have been attempting to want to do, even if it seemed to be so far away from your domain and requires a lot of preparation to get at. That preparation and that attunement to something you love will help replace the trauma when it visits upon us. Mm. You know?
Beautiful. Mm.
Because it invigorates the mind that wants to learn. And when the mind is inspired and is excited about learning, it kind of loses track of the thing that hinders it, which will make the trauma almost obsolete. But you want to keep going so you can just, like, bury the trauma fully.
Mm. Mm. Nice. And for you, can you share a little bit, since you play so many instruments, can you share a little bit about your relationship with them and how you utilize them to be different expressions of who you are?
Yeah, the guitar, you know, I started with the guitar, and I did not have a single guitar lesson growing up. So I taught myself how to play the instrument, and I taught myself by ear first, and then I was able to acquire some books about certain artists that had enough knowledge inside of it for me to decipher and make a conglomerate of ideas and kind of link the ideas together. But the guitar is by far, I found, to be the most universal instrument. It's universal in more ways than you could even ever imagine. Also, the guitar has a way of teaching you how to get to the same result by many different ways. which is quite a superb practice. You can play the same note on the guitar, the same note as in the same hertz that it is, which is the same frequency that it is, on six different places on the guitar, six different strings, six different frets, which gives you, and every time you play a scale and you shift positions on the guitar, you have to change the fingerings by which that scale is played to get still play the same notes of the original scale. So then you are shifting positions about the same things, but still producing the same thing. So it kind of trains your mind to think in six different ways about the same thing in real time and making beauty with it. That's one thing about the guitar that you don't find in many other instruments. The other thing is you can play chords, which gives you the rise of harmony. The strings, you can bend the strings, which takes the note from one note to the other without passing through just a designated frequency. There's so much about the guitar, but the best thing about the guitar is you can sing and play with it, and it's percussive, it's harmonious, and just it's got so much going on. I do all of my writing on guitar. Basically, I don't dare to write without the guitar because it's like an arm, you know.
I like how you say chords give rise to harmony.
You know, being in accord with things, being in kinship, there has to be a slight element of dissonance, and dissonance is the impetus for growth or for making harmony. So you need a little color here and there. You need a little tension here and there. It can't all be just major and positive and happy. Just a little bit of a tad will keep you on your toes, you know?
Let's talk a little bit about that. In Ayurveda, you have, when you're balancing food, five tastes, and there's that bitter element that kind of gives you that a little bit of that resistance. If you can share within music, and maybe because you're drawing these beautiful metaphors with life or way of being, how some of that resistance can really provide that opening, that passage, if you are willing to surrender to it or give it space.
The tension, you know, that occurs in music has a time limit. If you stay too much in that tension, you kind of lose the main course. Tension happens only to move forward. It is the impetus to move the song forward. It gives you the openness by itself, because the preparation is kind of getting yourself ready. The tension becomes it is a slingshot. It is like pulling the string back, and then you let it go, and it goes further, faster. You get your aim, you know? It narrows your options. It becomes very narrow, so you can only pay attention to that which is most important. And then you draw your aim, and then you let it go. And then you have all that much more to go. But you kind of have to tense up in order to deliver.
I like that.
Yeah.
Gives me a whole new appreciation for my father, who I love dearly, but he's good with tension.
Too much tension, you know, it's not cool, you know, definitely.
No, but in a beautiful way, like if we could celebrate that with ourselves, what we might find out about one another versus getting repelled by it, you know?
And, you know, the thing about, like, how do you create tension in music? Like the Western tension preparation is wholly different than the Eastern tension preparation. You know, in Western music, you have harmony. You actually have chord progressions that are moving in counterparts, and they're helping so much in keeping the bed under the melody in its proper mood. In Eastern music, you do not have harmony, especially in Indian classical music, which is by far the most developed and most ancient and still kind of holds its legacy for what it represents. They make their tension to release through rhythm and through numbers, through combination of strokes or through melodic notes using either the seventh or the flat second. So they use, they don't use harmony. They use just their own preparation of how they build melody, and then they resolve it. There is a system for sure called tihai, which creates tension to resolution in Indian music. It's really a superb form. And it's really great when you can combine Western harmonies with Indian key highs. You know, you get tension to resolution from East and West, you know. It's really awesome.
Maybe you should go play at the UN.
Oh, God. That's I did play for a group of mothers who come from Palestine and Israel at Esalen that were doing a mother healing ceremony, and they were just so overjoyed by the music and felt such great harmony and oneness. It was really fantastic.
Wow, what a treasure for you to be able to do that and carry resonance for them, as I'm sure felt like home.
Absolutely.
So, wow, we've gone through this beautiful esoteric connection from music to life. As you're speaking, you have this way about relating things one from the other, and I feel as if you're explaining music, but actually you're explaining life.
Yeah, I mean, they're so interconnected, absolutely.
I'm like, so it's just, I love how you're sharing right now. Why don't we shine a light on your album, The Further Shore of Light, and just share your inspirations for this. And I would love for you to start with Om Namah Shivaya and maybe your connection to that bed. You can share them all, but to that one in particular, it's jumping out at me right now.
Great. You know, we had a little typo in submitting the album. It went as further, but it's actually the farther.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. I see it. The farther shore of light. Yeah, I'm looking at... Oh, and then you know what I did? I just typed it as father, the farther shore of light, which is another metaphor here, but the farther shore of light, you're absolutely correct.
Yes, you know, but, you know, the digital age, you know, once a mistake happened, it was such a hassle to recall. So we didn't recall, but you know, it's not a big deal. Further, farther, it's okay, as long as they hear the music.
Perfect.
I recorded this album over two sessions. I took the first half. Om Namah Shivaya actually was recorded about 4 years ago. And then I finished the other half last October or September, October. The Om Namah Shivaya, I definitely, it was a different piece when I started, for sure. And I wanted to connect it to the Shiva Sadaksha, which is the mantra that is before it. And the mantra that's before it is, or the slokas, each verse is an exaltation on the syllable, on each syllable of Om Namah Shivaya. And there's six verses, and each verse is done in a different raga. And that was the hardest piece on the album, because I did an adaptation of a great singer from Bangalore. Her name is Shamala Bhavi. And she has sang these six ragas, and I did an adaptation for guitar, and a little bit, I changed some of the structure a little bit just to suit the kind of mood that I wanted to fit it in. But it was a great mountain to climb. It was a beautiful piece to adapt. But I did that after I did Om Namah Shivaya, the actual kirtan itself, because it took me that long to finish the Shiva Shadaksharas. You know, because the thing about Sanskrit, which The Farther Shore of Light is my first fully Sanskrit album. I've put out albums in English and Arabic, and each album I've kind of included a Sanskrit song, but this one was like fully Sanskrit. I played most of the instruments except for the bansuri and the girl singers. I did not sing the girl singers.
Try your ventriloquism.
But what I did is I went up to Redwood City. I have my longtime and best friend, Nick Peters, who's my co-producer. He has a studio up there. And I basically go camp in the studio for 2 weeks and just take a Thai massage mat and sleep on it and just record all day, all night, and sleep and record and sleep. Locking myself in that space really lets me go into the temple space that is inside. You know, I lived in India for a year almost, and I did a pilgrimage where I traveled to pretty much every temple that I see had a steeple. I just walked in there and started singing. Locking myself in kind of brought that feeling, and I was able to, you know, go back. And I don't know, I don't have much to say about devotional music, because simply in terms of when you are present with the music, that's the beauty of sacred languages, is you do not have to explain in your voice what's going on in the song. So you can fully enter the bhava, you can fully be in the presence of the sacred syllables and just feel the highest vibration you can feel. And then the raga will tune you in whether the mood should be of longing or of exaltation. And but you don't really, you don't go through the same thing you go when you sing a language that you are trying to deliver meaning as well, which is what happens in English. You know, you choose a lot between the which way you sing this, which way you sing that, and how you do this and this word and that word. But with Sanskrit, you just deliver and surrender yourself to the feeling of devotion, and you just cook yourself to get to that space. And when you get to that space, that is delivered.
And beautifully said. If you can share a little bit more about presence and set and setting that assist you to bring yourself into that space and also welcome your audience into that space with you.
Yes, there is truly a host of events that you have to kind of get your ducks in a row in order to enter the sanctuary, for sure. And it has to start from the drone. Basically, how I set myself up when the moment, if I'm playing live or in the studio, the first thing I do that I turn on is the drone. I have this little box called Ragini, and it emulates the sound of a tampura, which is a stringed drone that in classical music they play, and they play all of the melodies and rhythm against that drone. And it is the symbol of the universe, basically, the sound of the universe. It's one drone that keeps going. I turn that on, I let it permeate the room a little bit, and then I start to sing very gently, humming. The humming, and I choose my ragas or my moods according to when I'm playing and what I'm going to be playing. And really getting that drone going kind of sets the tone for I'm entering the temple. And then I approach everything with reverence. The reverence has to happen in the voice being open and constantly going back into yourself and seeing yourself as an open door, an open gate for both, for sending out the light and receiving the light. You know, food really also, you know, it's a major component of how you feel about yourself when you sing. If you eat too much, it's really hard to enter the sanctuary. So I eat like a snake. I eat a big meal, and then I nap, and then I wake up, and then I'm ready to enter the sanctuary. And then I feel, then I can go for 8 hours, or sometimes 10 hours, and the first hour will be just warming up, and after that I am just fully, basically, just on a different cloud entirely. And, you know, but you don't lose consciousness. It's not an out-of-the-body experience. It is really in the body experience. And also you're maneuvering and managing melodies and rhythms and harmonies, so you have to be on. You can't just forget which pitch you're singing on, and you sound like crap, you know? So being a devotional artist is really a task of, it's like walking a tight wire, and you have to feel that you're in the middle of nowhere, but you still, your feet are grounded and you're balanced and you can't tip over to any side.
Mm. And let's talk about that, walking the talk and embodiment, and how to differentiate that for those that are in a little bit of wandering and exploration.
Love reverence. I love approaching everything with reverence. But also, you know, there's a lot of frou-frou in the spiritual community about, you know, seeing the positive and all of that. It's really great to orient yourself to the highest of thinking, but also, you know, you do have to be grounded. And being grounded, if you're stepping on something that's going to poke you in the foot and you think, you know, it's okay, yeah, it's, you know, it's a little sketchy there, you know, for me. I'm very real about challenges of life, you know, because I grew up kind of I think I feel like my life was backward. I grew up in hell, and I'm getting to heaven, sense, you know. So I don't take anything for granted, but yet at the same time, I feel like, you know, you get to know yourself, you get to know your energetics, you get to know what kind of magnetism you have, and what you draw to you, and what you want to draw to you. And it's really our responsibility to work it, not to just go, oh yeah, it's all going to be good. No, look into the things. I mean, that's tension, you know, that helps you to release into a greater world, you know. But you have to work it. You can't just, you know. The other thing though, and there's such thirst for teachers, you know, and everybody wants a teacher who proclaims this person as their teacher, and then this guy proclaims this person as their student, and there's a lot of play like this. But, you know, I mean, if you're not learning from your own actions on every day and you're not paying attention, there's not much anybody can help you, you know. So you really want to be just real about what's going on for you, you know.
Aho. Oh. And if you can share a little bit about that being incongruency with where you are, if you step on a thorn and it hurts, you don't necessarily have to mask that. I know my daughter teaches me that all the time. When she's uncomfortable, she screams really loud, which is really beautiful because it startles me because I don't necessarily approach life that way, but it's really how she is. So if you can share a little bit more about how maybe you've discovered it's important to be really in harmony with wherever you are, whether your intention or floating off in bliss.
Right. That's for me has been the product of playing tabla, being on the beat, being on in rhythm, you know, never miss a beat. And, you know, first thing, you know, if you're not looking in front of you, you're going to step on a lot worse things than thorns, you know. So the first groundwork of being grounded is to have your eyes in front of you and to be moving in a manner by which you are in kinship with all that's around you. For me, what I do, I like to transmute things through gratitude and blessings, and, you know, difficulties are blessings in disguise. That's really a great mantra to use for me if I'm really working it and really looking to see what's happening. Screaming is great. You know, I feel, for me, coming from my voice practice, is voicing your feeling, your anguish, or your happiness, or your suffering is probably the greatest gift you can give your body. Because what happens to the body in the moment when you meet an obstacle is you stop breathing, and the stopping of the breath becomes the root of all of the discomfort in the body. So when you encounter something and you go with basically you really didn't lodge it into your lungs, which is, that's the first gift, you know, that's the seed of your suffering, is your lungs shrink and you start to feel sad about life. But, you know, I also pay attention to the kind of quality of voice I'm giving. You know, I don't use derogatory ways to express my suffering, because I feel like that invokes an entirely different aspect of seeing the lesson. But I do monitor myself a lot in terms of how I feel about what's happening to me. And I'm always reverent when I deliver the pain that's happening to me, as opposed to, you know, the blame thing for the pain is an incredible mechanism. You know, moving away from that is very important first for the peace and the harmony in one's own mind.
So having reverence for pain, what a beautiful phrase. So with that being said, you're an amazing teacher, and you're having a workshop coming up, I know, in the L.A. area, I believe, with Kimberly Wolf.
Yes, correct. Long Beach.
We're going to share links below, but if you can share that and your other performances that you have up and coming, be wonderful, so people can connect to your wisdom and rhythms all at once, and maybe a little tension.
believe me, I do not censor myself. You know, I say what I want to say with kindness, but, you know, if I hit the mark, you would feel the pressure. And you know.
I love it.
Well, I have, what I love about working with Kim, Kim is so much in her heart, and I've known Kim for so long. We've been working together for quite some time. And we do this really nice collaboration where she does the asanas and I do the mantras, and we collaborate on fitting the music with the asanas so that as the practitioner is practicing, they're also invoking the mantras, and they come out feeling really naturally, incredibly super high. And so we do that really well, Kim and I. And we're doing it this time at the yoga place in Los Angeles. That's going to be Saturday, March 22nd, which is coming up. You know, it'll be Saturday of the week of the interview. And the Yoga Place Los Angeles is 110 East 9th Street on the third floor and in the California Market Center in Los Angeles. So that's going to be fun, and that's probably we won't be doing that for. We do it every 3-4 months. So we probably won't be doing it for another while. And the other thing that I'm excited and I've been doing for a while in Los Angeles, in Beverly Hills, at the auditorium, Franklin Roosevelt Auditorium in Franklin Canyon Park, I work with Banafshe Sayyad, who's a fantastic, phenomenal dancer of Iranian tradition, whirling, and also just the whole holistic way of approaching the body as dance. Fantastic. We do every Sunday at Franklin Canyon Park from 11 to 2. Yeah, and it's fantastic. It's one of our... I love playing for dancers, I got to say. I think if you're dancing, then life is good.
Wow. And there's a lot of turtles in that park, right?
Yeah, turtles and ducks and all kinds of stuff. It's a great place to go play, you know.
Wow, every Sunday. You do that every Sunday.
We take some Sundays off because we also go to Essel and do retreats, and Banafshe will be at Hollyhock, and she'll be also in New York. So we please go to the website, namahdance.net. That's namahdance.net.
Okay, we'll put the link there.
Yeah, fantastic. And then last, what I'm going to be doing, which I'll be starting next week in Ojai, is a sing and drum class that will be happening every Tuesday from 4:15 to 5:45. And basically, the class is about the proper techniques of singing, and it will be held in the Eastern tradition, so there will be a lot of ragas and a lot of inflections of voice that we use in devotional singing. And also, it's open to all drummers, beginners and singers, beginners, and please bring your own drum. The drum section, so it'll be basically 45 minutes of voice, 45 minutes of drum, and there'll be some two at the same time. And also the drum section is going to be rooted in all the time signatures that induce that spiritual feeling and spiritual connection to the divine through music. I am so looking forward to doing that. This will be kind of like the first time I'm actually teaching a class on a regular basis. I haven't taught in 10 years. Before I moved to Ojai, I was teaching for about 20 years up in Palo Alto, the Bay Area. So this is going to be like my first ongoing class.
Beautiful. And where is
it? And it will be, it's going to be a sacred space in Ojai. That's 410 Bryant Circle. I will send you the link to that as well.
Perfect. We'll include all that information. How fun. Everyone can come play.
Yeah, absolutely. And sing and improve on the quality of your voice and the quality of your rhythm, which will also improve on the way you communicate with the world and the way you move through the world.
Mm, beautiful. Wow. Well, Tony, what a treat to speak to you. As I mentioned, I think you're explaining life through how music can be played from east to west and back again. So I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. This has been wonderful. Thank you for being such an agent of truth and light.
Thank you. Once again, I want to thank Tony for joining us today. if inspired, come connect and play either this weekend if you're in Los Angeles, or if you're passing through or live nearby in Ojai, or play in the park up in Beverly Hills. There are many opportunities to engage with music, dance, and your voice. We are going to sign out with Omkara and Om Namah Shivaya. If you'll take a moment to enter your sacred space, you might be surprised at what you discover. Until next time, this is She signing out with a big smile, a soft gaze, a full heart, and a namaste.
Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya.